Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
This is All of It on WNYC. I'm Shamita Basu. The play No One is Forgotten, written by Winter Miller, is performed in a single, sparse setting. Two characters, both women, are in some kind of jail cell. The only object in the room is a waste bucket. It's clear that they're being held captive, but it's not clear by whom, or for what, or for how long. It's an excruciating and somehow at times funny study of what happens to a person when they're held in isolation. Something that's happening to many people, being persecuted for their job, or their religion, or their ethnicity, all over the world right now. The playwright Winter Miller joins me now. Hi, Winter. Welcome to All of It.
Hello. Thank you. It's nice to be here.
You wrote this play a few years ago, but you were moved to go ahead and self-produce it after Washington Post journalist Jamal Khashoggi was killed in the Saudi consulate in Istanbul last fall. Talk to me about why that incident made you feel like this play needed to be performed.
Well, I always felt like the play needed to be performed. I mean, I wrote it to be performed, but I found that in sending it around to people, that it wasn't getting traction. People were very favorable about it, and saying, "Oh, this should be produced. This is, you know, two characters, single set, 90 minutes, easy to produce." But they weren't actually producing it, and suddenly everyone was paying attention. They were like, a Washington Post reporter, brutally dismembered, and the United States is looking away. Suddenly it was on everyone's radar in a way that it hadn't been. And it always surprised me that it hadn't been on people's radar, but I thought it is now, and that I would just kind of strike while the iron was hot, so to speak.
Mm. And you come from a journalism background. You worked as a research assistant to Nicholas Kristof at the New York Times, but at the same time, you've been a playwright. Can you talk about how you see theater and journalism as similar or dissimilar?
Yeah, I actually think that they're incredibly similar. I see them as just two sides of the same coin, and that with journalism, you're concerned with what can sort of tangibly be called the facts. We are here. This is the thing that happened. These are the number of people who have died or whatever. That it's very concerned with numbers, but it also needs a narrative. And that with journalism, I mean, rather with playwriting, that you need a narrative, but you have to be emotionally authentic. And so in a newspaper story, you don't have as much weight on the emotionally or the psychologically authentic. It's from your perspective. But in a play, you're talking through generally multiple characters. But all of those have to do and say things that would be in their character to do and say. But it still has to be factual. Like, for instance, in this play, things that, like, down to the most minute details, the size of the water bottle that comes through the transom, you know, the first thought was, well, you know, the transom would be better with an 8-ounce water bottle. But if you are anywhere international, it's very rare to have an 8-ounce water bottle because that's just inefficient. And that's not what people have. And so wanting this to be universal, then that has to be a certain size. So all of those things are, predicated on a truth or a regionalism or something. Like, there's nothing that happens that couldn't happen. I always feel like it has to be plausible. So in that way, both are concerned with facts, but how they are presented are different.
You went on a reporting trip with Kristof. Could you talk a little bit about how you feel like his process differed from your process for the work that you were there to do and create?
Yeah, I mean, mostly I was...
Tell us where you were, first of all.
Sure. And this was in 2006 in March. I went with Nicholas Kristof to the Chad-Sudan border. We wanted to go to Darfur, but we couldn't get in. And I wanted to go because I had been researching with Nick through 2004 when he was first writing about the genocide in Darfur. And I had seen stuff come through that was never going to be in the paper because of just how gruesome and awful it was. And also, you know, the paper can't put that on the front page every day. So most people didn't know what I saw and knew. And I kept thinking about how when the Rwanda genocide unfolded, I wasn't thinking about it. I was in school and I was just, you know, thinking about school. And I thought this time around, I actually know all this stuff that's going on. I have an obligation to not stand by. And obviously Nick was holding down all the reporting just fine. And there wasn't a need for me to even, you know, attempt that. But I thought, you know, what I am is a playwright. And so let me see if I can use everything that I've learned here and maximize all of the connections that I have through Nick to other journalists and aid organizations and be able to translate that into a play that is really authentic. And so I had a commission. I entered a contest and I won a commission to, you know, write this play that I had proposed. And I said to Nick, you know, I've won the commission now, you know, I need to go with you. And he said, no. But I worked for him every day. And so I just kept wearing him down and wearing him down. And finally he said yes. And so, you know, I paid for my trip. It was nothing, you know, through the times. It was just that I would get to accompany him. And he tried to talk me out of it right before. He said, well, you can't go. And I said, but I already have my ticket. Of course I'm going. And he said, and this surprised me, he said, well, it's kind of a suicide mission. And I have this real estate. I have a column in the New York Times. And, you know, not to be dismissive, but you don't. And I was like, yeah, but I have an obligation to do this. And as I said, I've already bought my ticket. So we went, and the thing that I most learned about Nick in the field is that he's relentless. And this is what was really amazing to me, because, you know, he's already won his Pulitzers. He's, you know, he's got the respect. He's already been writing about this topic for years. But he would go, we'd go from sort of like sun up to sundown with him interviewing people. And it would be really hot. But he wanted to know, like, what is going to be the best story? What if I miss something? Mm-hmm. And I don't think he thinks of it that way, but that's his work ethic. So being around that, I was impressed that, you know, he's not, I knew he wasn't an armchair reporter.
And Winter, that was a trip that informed your play in Darfur. And there's a lot of similar themes in this play that no one has forgotten that's playing right now. But as I mentioned, you don't really reveal a whole lot of information over the course of the play. We don't know who these people are, why they're being held, or who's holding them. Did you think of them as journalists while you were writing the script?
Yeah, I thought of them as a journalist and an aid worker.
Uh-huh.
Because the inspiration of thinking about it came from thinking about journalists. I was thinking about Times reporters who had been held captive in Libya, and them being, you know, four people in a cell, and what they did to pass the time. And that was the thing that most interested me, was how do you pass the time when you don't know where you are, how long you've been there, or if you're ever getting out? And so that was the thing that I wanted to explore. And since it had come to me via thinking about journalists, that was, you know, and aid workers, that was just sort of what I tuned into. But I wanted it to be universal, because it is something that could happen hiking. Mm. You know, it happened to Otto Warmbier for his very foolish choice of, you know, what he did. But that was not the price.
In North Korea.
Yeah, that was not the price to pay. It happened to Bo Bergdahl with however it was that he left the army. But that idea of how do you change, mm-hmm, once you're in confinement? And I thought of it as being very different from being incarcerated. Being incarcerated, particularly in this country, is a very different thing. And this play is not that.
Winter, we have less than a minute, but can you talk a little bit about how your work, it feels like it's meant to highlight the fact that do your job isn't quite so simple for journalists, especially right now, and journalists in these positions. Can you talk about how you're interrogating the role of journalism?
I mean, I'm not so much interrogating the role of journalism as saying, hey, everybody, you know, we should be paying really close attention to the fact that the U.S. is the fifth most dangerous nation in the country in the world for journalists, and that the president hasn't held a press briefing in more than 125 days, and that we as a country are only
I'm
as
sorry,
free.
Fifth most dangerous in what aspect? By what measures?
For the safety of journalists.
For the safety of journalists. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So we're behind Yemen, Mexico, not where you would expect the United States to be. But that, you know, we are only as safe as our or rather, we are only as free as our press is free. And I think a lot of us take for granted that the press is going to be there. Meanwhile, you know, entities are cutting their newsrooms just for budget cuts. So I just wanted people to be aware of we have to support press.
My guest has been Winter Miller, award-winning playwright. No One Is Forgotten is currently playing at the Rattlestick Playwrights Theater. That's in the West Village. It's playing until July 27th, correct?
Yep. 27. Five more performances.
Winter, thank you so much for being here.
Thank you for having me.
You're listening to All of It on WNYC. Stay with us. We have much more coming up in the next hour.
At Radiolab, we love nothing more than nerding out about science, neuroscience, chemistry.
But we do also like to get into other kinds of stories. Stories about policing. Or
politics.
Country music.
Hockey.
Sex. Of bugs.
Regardless of whether we're looking at science or not science, we bring a rigorous curiosity to get you the answers.
And hopefully make you see the world anew.
Radiolab, adventures on the edge of what we think we know.
Wherever you get your podcasts.